Before we get into the episode today, I want to address a few key points. It's been over 2 months since the murder of George Floyd, and since his death, a number of peaceful protests have occurred throughout the nation and globally, revealing clear systemic issues that have been ignored for far too long, highlighting in full that Black Lives Matter. In these moments of activism, questions were raised as I saw myself in these spaces, asking what it means to be a photographer when out in a protest, the line between respect and truth within storytelling. Thoughts of ethics and ego were brought into view, but I wasn't able to fully process this alone, especially during an ongoing pandemic. This conversation today brings a way to shed some of these questions into perspective between my friend Sharnaz Javid and a board member of the Authority Collective, Bunny Elion. Sharnaz is a photographer, a recent mother, and in my eye, a model on culture. Currently residing in Belgium, we both met here in Chicago. Sharnaz works primarily in a documentary-style, editorial-type environment, capturing people and scenes for a story she is creating from scratch or the world around her. You can find more of her work on her Instagram at Sharnaz_. Bunny is a photographer currently based in New York City and a board member of the Authority Collective, a collective of women, non-binary, and gender-expansive people of color working in the photography, film, and VR/AR industries. Bunny's work is about healing, searching for a better understanding of our current present, past, and future within her reporting on storytelling. More of Bunny's work can be found on Instagram and on her website, hellobunny.com. To amazing women, and for proper context in this conversation moving forward, I am a Latino, born in Puerto Rico, raised in the US, and currently based in Chicago. In our conversation, we touch on issues and ethics within protest photography, imperialism within the medium, and how we can continue pushing the conversation forward. And with all that said, let's focus in. Have each of you kind of introduce yourselves, how you identify, a little bit about your work, and what's it been like for you these past couple weeks, maybe? I'll start with you, Shar. Oh,
you said me go first? Okay.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Sharnaz Javid. I live in Belgium now, but I was living in Chicago the last almost 10 years. I'm 27 years old. I'm a new mother. I'm a photographer, a writer, and I guess just an all-around creative in the new sense of creative term, I guess. I occupy that community predominantly. So yeah, and my pronouns are she, her. And I'm Indo-Iranian. My Baba is from Iran, and my mom, Indo, is because she was born in Indonesia, but she was born in Deepak, which at the time when the Dutch were heavily colonizing Indonesia, people who were born in Deepak in Jakarta, they were considered, they weren't called Indonesian, they were called Indo because they were given Dutch nationalities and all these things. So I'm Indo-Iranian, an American, I guess, because I was born there. But yeah, multicultural woman over here. And yeah.
That was me crisscrossing around the universe, connecting the dots.
If you connected all of them, it just creates a big smiley face. So
yeah.
That's wonderful.
Bunny, how about you?
So my name is Melissa Bunny Elion. I use she, her pronouns, and everybody calls me Bunny. And I am a multimedia journalist, and I'm based in Yonkers, New York. And I focus on communities of color. I'm interested in different avenues of blackness. The experience of marginalized people is really important to me. I'm also a board member with the Authority Collective, and the Authority Collective is a group of gender expanding individuals and women of color who work in lens-based media. And we have over 230 members, and we work to foster change in the visual media in front of the lens and behind the lens.
Beautiful.
Amazing. I think this kind of important scenario right now in photography creates that dialogue between, you know, who's in front of the lens and who's behind it. And the reason why I want to talk about this with the both of you is how instrumental the conversations have been within like the Authority Collective, as well as the internal dialogues that I've been kind of, that have come up like personally. And so basically when you posted this thing on Instagram about having this, I would say, like, you know, it's hard to read the tone
through, you know, these kind of platforms. But the post was regarding about how, no, if you're not a Black photographer out in these protests, you shouldn't be in these spaces photographing. And
I was trying to say more of like, if you are photographing, because I can't take away your medium from you, that it should be personal and for yourself, not to be sharing publicly or like monetizing off of and using this as your moment. That's the kind of point that I was trying to get across, because I was noticing, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I was noticing, you know, a lot of friends and just other photographers that I value or photographers that I'm not familiar with. And I was seeing their work, especially during this time, more heavily on my Explore pages. I just felt like morally and like ethically, it's just not really, it wasn't your place to be sharing. You know, you can be an ally, you can be comfortable and have a really close, like intimate connections in these communities. I do myself, but even still, I know whenever I'm like, oh, I like to think that I know whenever I'm crossing the line. And I don't think everybody was doing it with such ill intent, but I think in the post I said, like, it's not your Gordon Parks moment. Like, I think a lot of people, and especially because photography is such right now, like an accessible medium to a lot of people, whether it's through your iPhone. I mean, there's so many ways to document things. And with this kind of not really like, not that, I mean, I'm not a person who says that you have to have a traditional background in anything, but whenever it is so easily accessible and easy to tap into and then join, which I love the inclusivity, you also have to know, like, there is a lot of things that should be on your mind ethically whenever photographing. And I think a lot of creative photographers that I was seeing that I know were using this as an opportunity to become photojournalists. And it is really completely different mediums. One thing is not the other, even if they sound the same, look the same, like whatever the case is. So I think for me in that post and the wording, you're right. It's hard to detect tone. I do try to be cautious of my tone and mindful of my tone, but I'm not always the best. And because I just moved to Europe in August of last year, and during these times, I was feeling so distant. And, you know, there was so much going on and everyone was really involved. A lot of my friends, a lot of family, they're participating in these protests and they're out there. So I couldn't have just been having these conversations regularly with them,
right?
Because I know they're busy. I know they're occupied right now. So the best way, it seemed, for any information to be circulating was through social media. So that's why I took to that platform to share that, because I'm nobody to say really, and nobody that everyone's going to listen to. But if somebody comes across my post who was thinking about going into the protest, I wanted them to be mindful being in that space.
Right. And I think,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, no. I think that caused me to have this kind of internal dialogue. And I think that's what was important about it. I think everything about, you know, the impact that photography has in the hands of somebody that isn't, I would say, well educated in the fact of like what the power actually can be held in these images and who's taking these photographs, is something that, you know, can be used as a weapon, very dangerous, very, you know, an act of violence. And what came up for me was this kind of internal dialogue about the ego and how I kind of see myself as a photographer who, it seemed like the North Star that I saw myself as a photographer in these spaces was hard for me to define again, basically. And that I think it's been, that post has been, I think, a month. I'm now more educated in my own self and like how that kind of approach is taking form. But initially there was a sense of, what are my intentions? Who am I in these spaces? Am I actually being the photographer that I want to be? You know, am I actually being respectful in these kind of areas where these are not my communities, but I do want to be an ally and I do want to like support the message and increase awareness? And these kind of questions of consent and these questions of just human decency, I think, you know, just being very human in these moments, you know, or something that came up for me. And I think it's just something that I think it's hard to put together, especially in a way of like how the pandemic kind of is isolating everybody. These conversations can't really be had as easily. So I was kind of trapped in my own little isolation of like, am I actually doing this okay?
Well, I think what this time has given everybody is opportunity to examine what really drives you. And for me, it got me reconnected to my purpose as a storyteller. And you, I just want to go back for a second. You mentioned yourself, you wanted to be an ally. I want to make a distinction between like photojournalism and documentary photography and going out. So I am a journalist, and I think what the Authority Collective was aiming for with our Do No Harm statement was, how do we ask ourselves those questions that you were asking yourselves, which is like, what, you know, important, thinking about your practice. How do we answer those questions while remaining within the boundaries of what is called for in our journalistic ethics? I don't know where it came from that journalists are not supposed to care about who they're photographing. It's like the direct opposite. We go into some of the most sensitive aspects of a person's life and try to visualize it so other people can get a sense of it, a sense of that reality, understand it, make decisions around it. I want to be careful with how we use the term ally in this conversation. Mm-hmm.
So to define it?
Well, one thing is advocacy and then the one thing is like journalism.
Okay.
And one thing I love about journalism is that like you just follow the facts and you come to conclusions and you do that process over and over again. Like you search for the information, look for the reality on the ground, and then report on that. So it's like the reality on the ground is the last time there was an uprising amongst young Black people, a lot of harm came to those people via the images. Mm-hmm. So what do we do this time around to not participate in that or to mitigate that? We do that all the time for sensitive populations. Like,
right. I mean, in terms of what happened in Ferguson, with, I believe, 6 men were found dead in the coming
2 years. Yes. It's just circumstances. And so we have to make sure we keep in mind the responsibility of visualizing things, especially what Sharnaz was getting to earlier, the technology. It's highly democratized, highly accessible.
Especially in the technology of facial recognition, like there's so many aspects that you really have to be aware of whenever you're in these environments or in whatever setting, that I think that some journalists are going to be more mindful of because it is a career. It's something that maybe they've studied or they've had their educational background in. So they are very aware of all of these different elements, moving parts, whatever. So technology, like on all fronts during these protests, you have to be like even more heightened awareness.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to, you know, these forms of manipulation of like hiding people's faces, be even a part of the conversation about, like, is that even a journalistic approach to these kind of moments? Is that something that needs to be done or something that is hindering the story?
Yeah, so there's no manipulating of images in photojournalism, only dodging and burning. With other times where you have to be cautious with people's identity, there's ways around it. And then there's also the reality that it's a protest and it's a high action situation and you are a news person and you are reporting. So it's just like you're weighing the need to know, which is a convention, which is a way of thinking in journalistic terms. So there's this idea of reporting for public benefit. There's the information that the public needs to know, like the public needs to know that police are firing tear gas canisters into crowds, injuring people, right? So that kind of level of information you want to know, like everybody should know this. So
it should be admitted.
Yeah. So it's like evidence, right? On one end, do I need to see that exact person looting and like huddled over with his goods and like leaving? I don't know. What is that? What is that telling me about this racial uprising and these racial issues? I mean, it's happening, but it's just like the way the prominence it gets compared to like what the actual subject matter. And we were talking about the idea of technology. There was this really great moment after a press conference where an individual named, I can't get their name right now, I'll find it, but it's a really great and powerful moment at a press conference where someone was saying to the press directly, like, we had to break the law in order for you to get, like, notice what we were doing. We were writing letters. We were trying to get the higher-ups' attention, this quote-unquote, like, good ways. But we had to go through these drastic measures to get your attention.
Now, here's the clip that Bunny is referencing.
We've tried many different ways to get the attention and the conversation of those in leadership roles and positions. It took us having to do this to get y'all to show up. We've been writing letters. We've been creating books. Photography. Performance art. We've been doing it every single way possible to let you know what we deserve, what we need. And you don't even have to dream it up. We've done the work for you. And so it's really ridiculous to me that we're still talking about monuments. It's really ridiculous to me that we have to fight for our dignity. You know, in the United States, there's a saying, life, liberty, and justice. Black people are still on life.
This person, Raven Wings, goes on to talk about this idea of Black technology, using Black technology to dismantle systems of white supremacy. And it's really interesting, that idea, as like our experience as a tool and something that we can rely upon in these moments as a way to look deeper at what's happening around us. And so when we're talking about who's in front, like what we're capturing, and then also like who's behind the camera, I think that is like one of the benefits. So when we're talking about being intentional about who we are asking to visualize.
Right. Right. Yeah. The thoughtful care in who's taking these images in these spaces.
Not even that. It's like making the moment real, or like bringing the moment home. Like, it's like, I know sometimes I go into spaces like, I want to photograph this, like what I would need to see to understand if I was there.
What are those steps? Is it talking to community members? Is it
talking to people? It's getting those details. Like if you look at images that came out after, you know, the transition was made to, after the push to hire Black photographers, the images got way more nuanced and into the protesters and their sentiments rather than, well, destruction. And so, not to shy away from destruction, but to only capture it is to be incomplete. We'll use our experience, what we know what it looks like to be in a struggle, from our own struggle, and using that to be like, okay, this is the kind of thing that I would need. Like the idea of like capturing someone hugging their loved one. And for me, it was just like, this is what's supposed to happen around the neck. Not like a cop putting their knee in it. For people who have been overlooked, in my opinion, it is important to be seen. And sometimes that looks like staring at those smaller things. And for me, it's like bringing the moment back to those smaller things and showing how important they are and how like that's actually what we're fighting for at the end of the day. It's like people to be able to embrace their loved ones, like, and not worry about them not coming home. Like, that's why that person had their arm around that person at that protest, you know?
I think to speak to that too, it's so interesting whenever, especially in minority communities, when you can't grasp that sentiment, because in some aspect, you can say that about any minority community. Like if someone not from this community is photographing it, then it's more of a spectacle than it is like, well, genuine or authentic or nuanced. Like it's so interesting whenever a lot of these photographers or documentarians or whoever that is not of this community was out there, and they couldn't grasp this concept of like, you don't really know what to capture. Not to say that you're not, that's not to say that you're not a talented or a supremely like gifted photographer or whatever your medium is. It's not to say that at all. It's just that like in this moment, it's you don't have the tools. And that's not something, no matter how many conversations that you have, no matter how close you are, no matter even how genuine your heart is, how true it is, like that's something that's kind of like, could be inherently given one from birth. Like it's something, it's a lived experience, not a learned experience. And it's interesting whenever that's a hard concept to grasp or just stance, because it's not a knock on that person and their capabilities. It's just like, well, it's the same thing. Like look internally, how do you feel if that was being done in your community? Like, don't you think you could capture it and present it more true than this?
It really kind of hints or really like touches on the colonialism in photography, the kind of like the impact of how like photographs being used as a device for subjugation and kind of like a device that kind of can control perceptions.
And that perception control, or not even control, influence, I'll say. That ability to influence perception is great. But before I go into that, I just wanted to say, off of Charlotte's point of not knowing what to photograph, I feel like in the absence of knowing what to photograph, that leaves photographers open to only needing or only relying on moments of action. Mm-hmm. So like if you're waiting for moments of action to develop in a chronic issue, you're going to be waiting a really long time. But there's so many things that are happening in between those moments that signify what's happening, what's going to happen next, or like what it's like along the way. That like when those moments do erupt, like you're already there. Like you're not scrambling. I feel like a lot of people went and scrambled to photograph because they're like, oh snap, buildings are going to set on fire. And we don't even know who set those fires. You know, it turned out there was a lot of people dressed in all black doing some really interesting things that had nothing to do with the protests.
Have you guys been able to see the Vanity Fair cover that came out with Viola Davis shot by Dario Calmis and his reference to a scarred black man being whipped in the back? And I think that poses that shift in that narrative and wanting to kind of like redefine certain images, really.
For me, I know it drew like a lot of critiques and criticisms, but initially I recognized the pose right away, and for me it transported me back to that image, that original image, and tying it to a history. And now, you know, and I like that. And so because it's like multiple ways of looking at this, many layers, I'm more of the and both mind rather than either or. So I'm not always looking for someone to be right or wrong. It's just like, oh, that's a good point. Oh, that's a good point too. the then it's like that idea of colorism and like what ideas would you come up with if you were photographing someone who was of a different complexion or a different background, you know? Like, but at the other end for me, it's just like Viola Davis also agreed to the shoot and she was probably really down with it and really loved the idea. So like, I love it and I hear all sides.
I mean, comparatively with another photo shoot within comparison is like Annie Leibovitz and Simone Biles and the talks about, you know, the editing of her skin tone and making sure like the proper people are behind the camera. Is that?
I don't know if it's the proper people. It's the, I feel like, proper effort. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like for me, it wasn't even about the skin tone thing. Like, the toning of things wasn't really, that's not like the biggest thing that I look for personally. There was this one picture where she has her hands at her hips. She's looking down and she just looks so comfortable. I was just like, that is not, just that alone, just her having like that, the way she was disengaged, I feel like, in that one. It was just like, and then on top of everything else, I was like, I don't know, this isn't like,
right. I think, yeah, I think it really goes into the effort aspect.
I was just like, this is not fitting into this puzzle.
Right. Minimal effort. At a professional level, there's always got to be some adherence to like the fact that you can photograph anybody and create a story or narrative the best that you can possibly can. And if you can't, then...
In terms of like Annie Leibovitz, when I think of her work, what I love about it is that she made movie sets for an image. And so it's just like knowing that that's how much you do on your shoots in the past. I don't know like if there's like budget interfering or whatever, maybe that's even a thing. But it's just like you have the greatest athlete on the earth in gymnastics. And some people say, like, just athleticism in general. I don't know about that, but let's say just gymnastics, right? Top champion, photographing them against a backdrop and in a dress that, like, I don't know. And then it's fashion, too. I get it, but it's just, like...
Right. I mean...
Effort, whatever the end product is, it's just, like, I can tell... I don't know what the effort was there for this level of, like, person and this level of magazine.
Another kind of touch point in the tool of like photography and the impressions that it can make. I think Char, you found, or I don't know what the story is behind this one photographer, but his name is Eddie Van Gestel, I believe.
Yeah.
A fashion, kind of diving into this like world of fashion for a quick moment, is the use of Black bodies in fashion and kind of like his portrayal has been, I would say, kind of iffy, if not dangerous.
I'll give you guys some context of the background. In August, I moved to the Netherlands because that's where my other citizenship is. But then in December, when my partner came to join, we decided to move into Antwerp in Belgium. So in December, I'm 34 weeks pregnant, something like this, waddling around with him, exploring our new home. We come across this exhibition and on this really popular kind of shopping street, but it's not commercial shopping street, just like a kind of quaint shopping street in Antwerp called Kloosterstraat. We saw this promotion of an exhibition, two exhibitions that were happening. And this photographer who owns the space, he has two places and they're across the street from each other. One is his main gallery. And then the other one is kind of this, it's a shop for incense and candles and like cushions and these kind of home things. But he also will exhibit, because it's a larger space, he'll exhibit his work there as well. So I saw on the street with my partner, these two big posters. One was called Pure Black and the other one was called African Queen. He has a little mission statement or artist statement about the exhibitions on the outside of the building. So we're reading this and it doesn't sound good. My partner actually had seen it first. He was walking home and then he when he came home, he was so upset and he was sharing this about me. So the next day that we were walking the street, we both look at it, even though he knew how he felt, he also didn't want to project and to see if I was having the same kind of qualms, which I did. So Eddie Van Gestel is this Belgian photographer. He is this white, late 40, early 50 year old man. And for like the last 20 years, he goes to Africa. And one of his mission statements, he said that he fell in love with Africa and the Africans. And then I later was to read, like, it was after watching the movie Out of Africa that he's kind of grown this interest, wanting to photograph it and to preserve it, you know, in its authenticity, because, you know, Africa, even though it's a continent, not a country, is progressing so much. He wants to capture it how it is before his kids will ever get to experience the true Africa. And it's all kinds of ignorance and like coded language that's in his descriptions. He had all of the women that he's photographing. They all are, you know, this perfect figure, like this Barbie type shape. And he is photographing all shades, but they are all nude, and it's like pornography. I mean, it's really dehumanizing. He, like, all the women are very young, they're very fit, they're extremely beautiful and attractive. All the men that he is photographing are these characters that have like missing teeth, and you know, I mean, you can imagine they're not the attractive men. They're older. They've got so much character that he felt that he had to photograph.
That is not the attractive men. That's hilarious because there's so many gorgeous. Anyway, I'm not going to get into that. But I'm just going to share. I'm looking as I'm listening to you. This is like probably the best way to like come across this information, because as I'm listening to you, I'm on his like Instagram.
Oh, you're looking at it.
Yeah. And it's just like, I'm not even going to comment. I don't like commenting on people's quality of work.
Yeah.
But all I say is like, compare that. I'm going to try and find one more photographer named Tommy Ominde. And he is based in Kenya. And I put it in the chat.
Okay.
And if you want to put this somewhere, Daniel.
I'll be putting it in the show notes, any links or anything like that.
So I'm just listening to Shauna's describe Eddie Van Gestel. And it's like something pretty about the photos, but then it's like once you know the source, it's like once you find out these diamonds came from a mine by a child, you're like, oh. But they're still shiny, right? But it's just like, now I know like how that shine came to be. And it's just like, do I want that? And so I only say that, and I look at Tommy Ominde's work, and it's just like, in terms of, so just like going to concepts, like forgetting like who's photographing it, not forgetting, the concept of like whose idea of authentic, like what can you tell me, like someone from Africa, what authentic African is, especially when there's like 54 countries and how many different dialects and tribes, and you know, I can't speak to if there's a sense of true authentic Africa, and I have closer connection to the continent than that person does. And so like when I went to Johannesburg, I went in knowing that I didn't have that level of connection. So it's really interesting for someone to go into, especially someone from Belgium, given the history of Belgium and Congo.
Yeah, I mean, he's constantly, whenever we were viewing his work in person, we tried to have a conversation with him, because I think a lot of times, and not even just with him, in photography, like so much of the photograph, and as it should, is just solely put on the subject matter. And if that's really moving, as instead of if the whole image, like the composition and what you're doing, like how you were saying, you know, actually creating a scene for this photo, or if you're just taking a photo of some famous athlete or some celebrity who that they do the work alone. So we, in our conversation with Eddie, we were trying to ask him, you know, if this were a Belgian woman, like, would it be as strong? Do you think it would be as powerful? And a lot of the conversation, even though we were trying to be as diplomatic as possible, he was in a lot of denial because, you know, he sells these prints for thousands of euros. His demographic is predominantly, his clientele is predominantly white or in Belgian. And it's like this stagnated sense of like voyeurism for them who, you know, they can experience this Africa that he's creating just by looking at it. It was really horrible. There were photos of women who, again, they were completely nude, and he has them in like broken chains. So it was a lot of stuff kind of like this, like horrible things like this, that Eddie was really kind of coining. And his mind, I think he really believed that he was the only photographer to do this and that he was creating something new. Even though, you know, Belgium especially has this horrifying past with many countries in Africa, and, you know, the king of Belgium during the pandemic and maybe a few weeks ago now wrote an open letter, not apologizing, but acknowledging their past. Belgium had, you know, their own human zoos here. And it's just really, it was really, really interesting to see that he thought that this was something that he invented and that there was no kind of blemish or mark on his consciousness at all, or feeling like this is something that I should give back. A lot of the subjects he was describing as like they'd never seen a camera before. He found them in the far corners of Africa. Like, yeah, it was extremely exploitative. So
To the four corners of Africa, you had to go through the city to get to the four corners.
Exactly.
A whole lot to get there. Right. Not saying it's not worth that trip and worth that depiction, well, being depicted, or I don't know about his specific methods. When I got to my experience, it was just like, wow, I never get to see Africa. It's like a place where, like, you know, there's communities and there's a college across the street from the hotel, mm-hmm. you know, and just like shops and people just, you know, just like regular everyday life. It's always this like this extreme, like safari-esque mm-hmm. endeavor. Like, I'm an adventurer and this is what I got from my travels. Look at this. Mm-hmm.
Right. This guy, Eddie Van Gestel, is approaching this like colorblind racism and seeing as if like there's nothing capable of being racist because he is not seeing it. There's that level of self projection that he can't like escape almost.
How do you say I can't see something? Believe me when I tell you it's not there. Like, you just told me not to listen to you. So I don't usually take and like advice and information from people who haven't been racialized their whole life. That's just my personal stance. It's just like, you know, sometimes I always peek back in to be like, okay, let me make sure I'm getting outsiders view. It's just like, but it's just like, there's so many things not being considered because you're choosing not to see certain things as so. It's just like, I can't work with that. So it's just like, I conserve my energy for those things. Just like,
yeah, it's a type of world building that doesn't truly, it's your own. It's like a personal, isolating, self-defined utopia that doesn't really exist. And it does really play into that imperialistic aspect of photography and the sense of like a very comparative relation to black and white and this sense of othering of the sort, you know. And that term othering is, I think, a very predominant word. Being from somewhere and then feeling as if from somebody else's like societal definition, being other because in pieces by their view, it's you're less than them in some sort, whether it's in a religious sense or in a political and just a power dynamic that can't be fully understood. I think there's a lot of layers when it comes to, you know, race and how things are kind of like constructed in our modern times is due to that perception of world building that was defined by a majority that they call the minority. And that's a problem. I think that's when it, for me, that's when I see this guy, Eddie, taking control of his own reality and imposing it on other people. That creates a problem. And then seeing the photographer that you linked, Tommy Omende, right? Creating a world that is a little bit more true to, in comparison of Eddie's like visualization and what this kind of, when you're presented like that black and white kind of relationship, it's almost that dehumanizing quality to it, where it's more, you're not photographing a person, you know, you're photographing an object. The objectification of that creates a problem.
Yeah. And I mean, just to speak about the work, like purely or solely, I feel like in his case, you know, taking away the subject and like the content of the matter, I don't think that there's strong images alone. I just think that there's a lot of post work that goes into them. And then the quality in which he's able to print because of the funds that he's able to put into this is what really speaks for the, yeah, it's just the quality of it. And that's not, I mean, sure, this style isn't really for me, but also that much in post is, it's why I personally gravitate so much to photojournalism and documentary photography as well, because it's like, it is very real. I think there's so much power and strength in an image whenever it is solely off of that image, not what you have to do behind it to make it more.
To kind of jump off from here in a way of talking about how can we like push for a more, you know, transformative moral environment when it comes to photography?
I think we can all take a look at the Photo Bill of Rights.
Created by the Authority Collective.
In conjunction with many others. Let me pull it up. It's photobillofrights.com. So the Photo Bill of Rights, it's like COVID-19 really pinpointed and exacerbated all these frictions that freelancers in the photo industry of all different stripes from different parts of the world came together and was like, okay, this is wrong. And now for some reason it became like crystal clear and everybody was like galvanized. Everybody's at home anyway. Man, the power of like people being at home, and started hashing out this really robust document. And basically it talks about the rights of image makers, whether it's from health, access to healthcare, safer, more support on our assignments, transparency in the payment process, sexual assault issues, creating channels to like report things and being considerate of people with different disabilities. It's a wide ranging document, just imagining better ways of operating as an industry that are very practical and like nuts and bolts. So it's not like we should get more diversity. It's like these are the things that are keeping me awake at night, because I can't fulfill my role and my responsibilities because I'm being shortchanged XYZ, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a really great document for people to consider. And if you agree, sign on. And then the more people that sign on, the more I say, okay, we're building it, we'll be, there's sea change happening. Let's shift course.
And Char, I also want to get your perspective on kind of what you think about how we can push for like a more, you know, transformative, you know, moral, ethical kind of like community within photography. Being somebody that I know from, you know, Chicago and then moving into a new space in Belgium.
I mean, I think that really, as maybe as vague as it sounds, everything starts from the beginning. Like it starts with the seed during this time in lockdown. There's Antwerp is a pretty international city. Depending on the neighborhood, of course, like anywhere is going to be more or less diverse. But making this space, you know, when I first lived here, I'm obviously looking for either brands or people or companies that I can align with, and after the birth, like hope to build some kind of future with it or relationship with. And there was this one company here, which is great. It's this lingerie company, but it's a really small team, and they're really all about inclusivity and gender and identity. But as progressive as they are, race is never a thing that they have to think about, because you know there's no diversity in their team. And it's not even just being in Belgium. It's like in any corporation, in any company, in anything, like if you don't have these different perspectives at the table with you from the drawing board, like you're already lost. You're already like having to backpedal. You're already having to journey this. And I think a lot during all of the protests, which started in the States and then have kind of spawned, like grown globally. I think that, I'm sorry, I'm like going all over the place. Well, this company asked me they went to this group chat of all of these people that they work with, creatives, designers, architects, whatever. And they asked like specifically the women of color in this group chat, like, can you share your experience with me? And that was, you know, really missed the mark. And it's like these kind of day-to-day things, if you had these diversified perspectives, even not even that you have to be talking about these topics, but just how people talk about anything would already be so much, you wouldn't have missed so much of the mark already if we're dealing with other people of other cultures, about other ethnicities already from the beginning. This is another point that I was trying to make, in that like in this time where everyone is kind of forced, or it is more obligatory to be aware, even though you should be socially aware, you know, there's a lot of performative awareness and advocacy going on too in these brands and corporations, where they don't want to lose some of their following or any of their business, that they are including, being more inclusive and really showcasing their diversity. But it's not anything that's internal. It's only external. It's only on the surface that they are making these efforts. So I think that in more times than not, creating these spaces and transforming these spaces is really going to fall into people of minorities, like their own hands in building these spaces themselves. Like I think that's, again, it comes down to like, you know, if you're of the community or not, whenever you're photographing the protest, like, do you know what's a photograph? Do you know these intimate moments that really are capturing the message or the day, and like really surmising what has happened? It's going to have to be in our hands. And I think that's obviously, I'm not the first person to say this is a growing idea. And I think that's why there's so much entrepreneurship that is growing, that already has been, but people are really highlighting it even more so now. And they're creating and sharing lists of businesses to patron. And I think I think that minorities know how to be inclusive. Like, I mean, they know how to do things for themselves. And I think that they also are kind of, in a biased way, like born with bigger hearts. Like, you know, in your own cultures, in your own ways, you know, some form of discrimination. So you already are handling things with more care.
I know a great way we could move this forward is like find another word that's eliminates minority. Because it's just not accurate anymore. And it hasn't been for a while, if you think internationally.
Yeah, I think there's the approach of community. I think that the word majority, minority within a community doesn't exist. You know, I think a true community doesn't allow for that to happen when everyone is a part of a whole. In a sense, you know, these terms of minority, majority, they don't exist. You know, there's when you're trying to do everything for the community, everyone's working alongside each other, and there shouldn't be that dynamic of above or below, who's on top and who's at the bottom doing most of the work, if any. or at the top doing if any kind of work at all, and claiming this power position. I think that's that creates that dynamic when people are more focused on themselves and their self-centric approach to how they live, and that essence to being a part of a tribe, in a sense, you know, being a part of that community and vocalizing efforts within it, and going all the way from policing your own community and not having this outside source being a very domineering aspect of it.
But it's still hard to have outside. You know, I was thinking of this idea of like the idea of triangulation, and just like if you're lost, if you could find 3 points, you could find that thing you're looking for, maybe. Or so it's just like, I think it's important to have those outside perspectives. But like you said, this is like not as the dominating force, it's like a force, but it's not a dominating force. And I think a lot of what people worry about in like destroying hierarchies is just like, if you're on top, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm not on top anymore. And it's just like, it sounds scary, so people buck against it. But it's just like, we're just asking you to be a part of, not like on top of. Y'all still gonna be here. There's not another way for you to exist that doesn't have to operate on top of other people's backs. Community is something really important that Authority Collective is big on. One part of our mission is doing industry side of things, but then the other part is like getting more opportunities for members, creating a space for support, discuss incidences when they happen, and empowering them to take on projects of their own and become authoritative wherever they are, even if they are in the minority in the room, you know? So that's another part of why we exist. So yes, second and third, I guess I'm thirding that, like the creation of those spaces. Yes, absolutely important.
I think there's a quote from Dario Gomez, the one who shot the cover for Vanity Fair. He mentions in this interview how, you know, it's not really about black and white. It's about the opportunities and how, like, we mistake talent for access to opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I think in this community aspect, those opportunities are more inclusive and more available, where it's not just your go-to person in a pinch, where I think in a COVID situation, I think there it really highlights that more, because in a go-to pinch, you're not gonna the sense of like risking for somebody else that you don't know. But I think the opportunity to risk it is something that is dives into a lot more possibilities. And that's I think that's just an interesting kind of perspective, what he was kind of like talking about within being the guy who shot the cover, not being the only black photographer that could have done it, but he was the first. Mm-hmm. There could have been more opportunities for other people to be the first, but he was the first.
I think that the part of the quote that I caught was kind of talking about predicating these opportunities on talent as opposed to the actual identity. And I think that could also solve a lot of problems, even in this fight, like equal opportunity for women. It's like I met somebody in our neighborhood, and they're a publisher, and they publish predominantly Japanese and women photographers, but based on his own eye, because he is finding these people through social medias, and they're usually like accounts or their websites where, you know, their face and their identity isn't present. It's just their the work that they produce. And most of the photographers that he comes to publish and work with, he's basing it solely off of the work itself. And I think if a lot more people did that, that there would be more diversity in who they are hiring, because they don't even think about looking at like who really deserves a lot of the opportunities and to be in the space predicated on that alone. That's not, unfortunately, such a common in, I guess, in more corporate settings or the bigger roles that you want to have this presence. I thought that was interesting. So going back to the quote that you're saying, there'd be a lot more yeah, diversity if it was that, and it's not.
I know there's a lot more. I feel like this topic is just so, there's a lot of like routes that we can go back into. What's next for you? Like, what do you have planned? And like, how are you feeling, basically?
I am a little stressed. I am finishing my master's project at Columbia Journalism School, and I'm doing some freelance writing and editing a photo essay that I did on my mom, who's a frontline worker. She works as an emergency room tech. Just like the home life during the last few months and like the changes in it. Yeah, so I'm just like wanting to get all those things out, unless like relaunch myself in October. And then everybody will see what I'm about, and then it won't be a question for myself and hopefully for others. So that's my future.
I think my future is that in other ways too. I moving here towards like the middle of this pregnancy, stabilizing and really like laying down roots in a new country, two new countries during the corona crisis has been really difficult. Really finding myself again in this space, and also such a new community being, yeah, in Belgium, where this perspective, there is this perspective here, but it's not mainstream and it's not really coined in their inherent culture. I guess 3 days ago, there was protest. Well, there've been a few protests. There's been a lot of kind of social awareness happening in Belgium lately. They've been tearing down building or statues of King Leopold all over. There's been protests in Antwerp, in the city that I'm in. And then even as recent as like 2-3 days ago, because of someone was killed by the police here. I think for me, and what makes the most sense for me is like, how can I find these communities and really contribute in on this side of the world? Like, how can I carry on this work and provide whatever support that I can offer? I think that's where I want to grow as a person here, is like continuing it, because it's not just an America issue. It is a global issue. Yeah, how can I help to grow or be part of?
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you again, Char and Bunny, for taking the time to discuss these important topics. It was great having you both, and I learned so much from the two of you. It is truly something to think about moving forward, especially if you're out photographing and even participating in these types of spaces. Being mindful and self-aware is key. Let's make sure that representation in all platforms are held accountable to create a more equitable environment, making space for the right voices to be heard with clarity and strength. I want to add as well that there are a lot of ways that you can continue the conversation, one of them is by sharing this podcast, but really taking the time to create these kind of dialogues within your friends, colleagues, and family members are essential. These hard conversations are only difficult when someone isn't open to listening and learning from each other. Let's move forward with open ears, minds, and sight towards a better future. Make sure to follow Char and Bunny on their respective Instagram accounts at Sharna__ and HelloBunny, Bunny with an I instead of a Y, as well as to look more into the Authority Collective and their recent initiatives. If you have been digging the show, rate and review us, and follow us on Instagram at unfocused.am. I want to thank Charlie Cooper for the musical sounds that you get to hear on this podcast, and thank you everyone who's helped me so far. I hope you stay safe out here during this ongoing pandemic. Stay tuned, stay healthy. See you next time.